I have to be honest, though, with you, BT, where I don't feel, and I said this yesterday, not that I was anticipating a Knick loss. I didn't have a good gut feel yesterday. I didn't think the Knicks would win two games in Indiana. I felt that way before the series. I thought home court was going to be huge. But after they won a game three, I was like, hey, you know what? What the hell? Flip a coin. I didn't have a true gut feel. Mm-hmm. My gut feel this morning is this series is not over. And the reason why I think it's not over is because, A, I still believe the Knicks are as good, if not still better, than the Pacers. Again, the talent can outweigh the team cohesiveness. I think the Knicks have more talent than the Pacers do, even though I give the Pacers credit for being a better team. The disparity is not 3-1 like we've seen. It should be a 2-2 series. And they have two games at home. I can't imagine the Knicks losing three in a row at Madison Square Garden, which is why we said if that does happen, then Tibbs' job comes into question, all those different things. But my gut feel is the Knicks win tomorrow. Anything could happen in Game 6, and I do not believe they are losing Game 7 at home again to this same team. So I don't think this series is over just yet.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I'm not going to put them in the dirt yet. I'm going to keep the tombstone, the headstone, you know, off to the side a little bit here, and I'm going to remain hopeful. I mean, I'm not going to tap out yet. I'm not going to cash out. I've been less than enthused about this team's prospects really since the start of the year. So there's nothing really new from it. It's no real change of emotion except that I just don't want the season to end.
Right.
You know, a lot of the things that worried me, unfortunately, have been coming to fruition more and more as you play better teams. But, yeah, of course you could win tomorrow night and get a little home cooking and, you know, get a little mojo back. And, you know, you're always a 45 spot away from Jalen Brunson from doing something crazy on the road. And then if you get back to a Game 7, there's really, you know, all bets are off here. I felt better about last night, more so than you, because I did think that Tom tapped into some stuff with the rotational, pardon me, that I thought that he would stick with. And I'm just kind of looking at some notes I was taking. I want to make sure I don't miss anything. So, all right, so the first 4 minutes, the starting fives plus minus was minus 7. They were down 16-9 first time out. And then Cat picks up foul number 2, a lazy foul, with 7:48 to go. Hart's the first sub. And then Deuce came in. And then Precious Achiuwa came in at the 4:43 mark. So I'm like, okay. So he is now still open to keeping things open, if you will. And there was one point in the second quarter where you had Deuce, Hart, Cat, OG, and Wright. And then Shamet came in at the 10-minute mark. And honestly, the Knicks were okay. And the run that they had came with Brunson on the bench. Remember, it was 51-51 with about 7 minutes to go in the second quarter. And there was a timeout. And I remember as they went to break, I'm like, I want to see if he keeps Brunson on the bench. And he did.
Yeah.
And I love Brunson, but I actually thought that was the right move because the other unit was flowing.
This is where you were texting me and we're kind of fighting over the text.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm not going to get wrapped up in this now. I can tell our tones were completely disagreeable. It's so obvious how different we were at that point. So anyway, in a low, I just wanted to kind of run through a few of the mechanics that were important to me, only because it's a playoff game. And I really did think that I felt kind of good. Like midway through the second quarter, and even at the half down 5, and then bang, start of the third quarter, 7-0 run, timeout, no subs, and it was what it was.
And even with that, watching the game play out, I still wasn't like, oh, they're going to lose this game, the way that I felt in Game 3, where I thought the game was over when they got down 20 points. But yesterday was just waiting for something to click, and that's what made it maddening. That every time you're like, all right, here they come. Like, the Pacers weren't shooting the lights out. I know Haliburton was good, and the Pacers ended up hitting big threes down the stretch where the Knicks couldn't. They were still right there. I was waiting for Brunson to take over, or Cat to take over, or Ananobi to actually hit a three, and it just never happened. And then the sloppiness continued. I was at least satisfied, and this is what we were texting about, where you were saying, hey, you can't deny that they're better defensively without Jalen Brunson. And I just didn't want to make it about Shamet or DeLon Wright. Like, I can't go down with those guys on the floor. So I was at least satisfied that the majority of that second half, specifically the fourth quarter, you had Brunson and Cat out there. They just couldn't figure it out. And it wasn't just the defense, because, Mitch Robinson was really a non-factor in this game.
He had a little spurt. We had a couple of stickbacks, but he was a minus 20.
Right, so it wasn't just about the defense. And I don't think it wasn't a negative with Brunson and Cat playing together. It's just that they didn't do anything.
They didn't.
Offensively.
But that's one of my concerns and things that bothers me about this team is that, yeah, I mean, they've had fourth quarters where they've gone bonkers and they've done great things together, regular season, postseason as well. But too often, they don't complement each other well. I'm going to use this analogy, right? So I'm looking at some of the, and the it's not just last night. Like the plus minuses for the Knicks starters historically, from a playoff perspective, are bottom of the barrel, deplorably bad. I mean, but last night, just take last night for a moment. Jalen Brunson minus 16 for the game. Bridges minus 13. Mitch minus 20. And DeLon Wright was plus 11. Shamet was plus 6. We didn't need to turn this into a 5-minute debate on DeLon Wright and Shamet.
No, but also it's who they're playing against on the floor at the same time.
I understand that. But there's no doubt. But if I can exploit that, or I'm going to try to do that as long as I can. But to me, it's like if you had a lefty hitter, and you had multiple lefty hitters who just, there was enough evidence that they could not hit lefty pitchers. 137 averages, a ton of whiffs. Like, would you run those guys out there in succession? I know your answer is no, and my answer is obviously no. And I know it's not apples to apples, but if there's a group that doesn't play defense well together, are you going to run them out there as long as you have thus far? And my answer is no. I'm going to break it up with a righty. I'm going to sit one of those lefties and wait for a righty to pitch. So I'm not saying there's a lot of answers here, but when Wright played and Shamet played, they honestly acquitted themselves pretty well, and the numbers reflect that. You're not winning anything with those guys. I get it. But at least as a Band-Aid, while the other guys are trying to figure things out, that's something that I would have ridden a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, they did get... to me, I don't want to ever see Landry Shamet again. I don't want to see DeLon Wright again, although I'd rather see Wright than campaign. I'm fine with that, but I cannot go down with that. I think the bigger issue is we kind of agree on the same principle here. The guys that they brought in to get the job done, it just has not worked to the level that they had hoped, which was a championship level. That's the issue. The issue is not we need more DeLon Wright, more Landry Shamet.
Yep.
The issue is that the starters that they have aren't working.
They're not. But that's why it forces me to at least think about those guys. Sal, think about a wrestler. I think you'll like this. Think about a wrestler back in the day who was awesome in the ring and awful on the mic. So you needed a Bobby Heenan or Albano back to kind of grab the mic and, you know, kind of pump this guy up and put him over a little bit. Well, to me, Jalen Brunson is like he's like a Bret Hart. He's a great in-ring technician, but he needs a different manager. He needs somebody that compliments him better. And honestly, Cat's not that guy.
Yeah, and DeLon Wright is like Barry Horowitz. And you want to play
the IRS? Yeah. Steve Lombardi,
the Brooklyn fan. Brawler. 888-808-1019.
Shabbat's what, SD Jones?
If that. Carrie is calling from Sayreville, New Jersey. Hi, Carrie.
Hi, guys. This team breaks my heart. They really do. But there was a point where I literally would give my left leg for a layup. Like, I can't see OG and Bridges just under the basket.
I love the Knicks, but Carrie, I'm not making that trade. Come on.
Easily. Take my left leg for a layup at this point. They're under the basket, and they're just dribbling it out with these fadeaways and just forcing threes. Like, just take the easy 2 points. And then you...
Did
you
go to the watch party?
Hard, but then you're going to play him.
Did you go to the watch party with Loogie last night?
I did. Loogie and Paul. It was a good time until it wasn't. I think Paul and my husband were having a contest who could enjoy the food more and the suite. But
so it was Paul, Loogie. Oh, you guys got a suite?
Sweet.
We had a suite. Yeah, it was pretty nice.
Who hooked it up?
My rep for my season ticket.
Yeah, I know it wasn't Loogie. He's bringing the passion.
Carrie,
he's not bringing the sweet.
And her husband taking Loogie. Well, she took Loogie, and then Loogie took Paul.
Yeah.
If you did trade your left leg for a layup, who would take care of you? Your husband or Loogie? At this point,
I was going to say.
Ooh, that's a good point. Depends who I'm bringing to a game, I guess.
Would you trade your husband for Loogie for a championship if you're giving up a leg for a layup? I mean, it seems like you're open for deals here.
I'll give up pretty much anything for a championship. I don't blame you.
Can I ask whatever you it takes. Carrie, can I ask you something, though? In all seriousness, right? So you called up, and we know you're an awesome fan, and you do all this stuff. You go to the games. You love it. And he said, I'm heartbroken. To me, now I'm bothered, and I'm pissed, and I'm angry, and all that stuff. Heartbroken is when something happens that I truly don't expect or I don't see coming. How can you be heartbroken when there were so many signs this year that the Knicks weren't good enough?
It would be better if they were. I feel like they're not playing as good as they can. Indiana is not this much better than them. Indiana is better than them. They just look gassed and flat. Yeah. And bad decisions. Like, You can't have Hart on the court for 37. I know he didn't start, and then you're going to have him out there the whole game. He brought nothing to the table yesterday.
Yeah, I know.
He had five turnovers. He's not scoring. He's not playing defense, and he's turning the ball over.
Yeah,
you
got
to have a guy, at least get Deuce in there, where he could get back in transition. You know, he's got the speed. He could play both ways.
I think it's easy to pick on Josh Hart now and easy to forget how integral he has been. See, that's part of the problem, though. One night, Hart plays lights out, and it's, oh, my God, what would you do without this guy? The next night, it's five turnovers. He can't guard anybody. He can't shoot. Jeez, this is all. So there's the ups and downs there. Josh Hart has been a big-time piece, a glue member of this Knicks group. Now, you could say ultimately it's not going to be good enough, but to just dismiss Josh Hart when he's had some terrific games in this postseason, to me, would be incorrect. I think that everybody's inconsistent on this group, which is maddening. I'm more frustrated with Jalen Brunson because I'm going right to the top. Guys with the highest expectations. Brunson has not had. Cat has taken over the fourth quarter in game three. Brunson has not had his game yet.
Mm-hmm.
As a group, they choked away game one. I do want to get back, though, BT, real quick to the heartbroken thing.
Yeah.
I think last year after game seven, heartbroken would be a appropriate feeling. With the way that season ended, loving that team as much as everybody did and just knowing that they fell short and maybe not even their own doing because they were injured. I do think, though, this particular series, getting this close to the finals without the Celtics or Cavs in the way, I do think if the Knicks were to lose, I could understand feeling heartbroken as well.
Yeah, and listen, I got away from being the minutes police. I'm certainly not going to be the emotional police here. I mean, everybody can compartmentalize this if they lose the way you got to do it. But again, I just think about, like, heartbreak. To have your heart broken, there's got to be a certain either expectation or connection. And you know, because you sit next to me every day, I've never connected to this team the way I have other teams
last year.
And I didn't expect them to win the championship.
But,
so heartbreak for me doesn't work, but others it might.
No, that's fair. But because you're right, you were saying that all year long. But before the Pacers series, I think the majority included, like...
I thought that they'd win the series. I thought they'd win six or seven. They were favored. They were favored. Slight favored. But
now I don't go right to heartbreak. I'm still in the anger phase.
Oh, yeah. Listen to the first hour, Free Odyssey app. We're raging.
Like... The game one, I don't know how you could say, like, oh, man, that was a heartbreaking look. No, game one was a sickening, disgusting display of choking up a game to a level that I had never seen before when it comes to the Knicks. I saw it in football, but not with the Knicks.
Yeah.
So I don't go to heartbreak. I think last year would have been fair because there just became a point in that seventh game where you knew this team maxed out.
Yeah.
There was no more left to give.
That's why it's not heartbreak. It's almost resignation, like, okay, I understand the circumstances without Jalen, without Mitch, without who else was banged up, without OG with a hamstring. Like, I went into that game. I remember I came back. We had a baseball game. I came back. I remember I had it on DVR. I somehow managed not to know anything. And I was like an hour plus late to the game.
Right.
So I get home, boom, DVR on. OG hits the first corner, I believe it was from the corner. Like a triple, and I'm like, okay. And I allowed myself to believe maybe the magic of the Garden for a moment will kind of fuel us here, but it wasn't heartbreak for me because I'm like, how can I expect these guys to win when 60% of the starters aren't even here?
Is there a loss that you recall being heartbroken
100%.
With?
Yeah, oh, God, Yankees 2001, broken bat, base hit up the middle, obviously flushing it down. And my heartbreak with the Red Sox, that was more anger and embarrassment when they flushed a 3-0 lead.
Right.
Heartbreak eventually, but they got crushed in game seven. I had an hour and a half to process Ewing missed finger roll.
Oh,
devastating, unspeakable heartbreak, no question. You know, there's been games with the Jets, of course, AFC Championship games where I am, you know, especially back then, borderline inconsolable, where I'm just staring ahead. That's heartbreak to me. Honestly, even St. John's, when they lost to Arkansas, just the emotional investment. I got back to the hotel. I'm like, wow. I mean, it's been like a month journey, this ride, and now I'm back to the hotel collecting my stuff and, you know, leaving Providence. I'm like, that ended fast. That was sadness, and that was some heartbreak of a different level. But that's the difference. That's how I kind of roll.
Because you expected St. John's to move on. Heartbroken with Soto signing with the Mets?
Heartbroken, let's see. That's a good question. You know, and by the way, he's under 230, so it's not exactly the good day to bust this out.
Right.
He's at 229, bro.
He's coming.
It's all right.
Yeah.
229.
He'll be all right.
Hey, I got to say, Juan Soto is hitting 229.
Yeah.
As I answer the rest of the question here, and the OPS is about 720. I was more, I was more like, I got to deal with this guy, you.
Yeah.
I got to deal with all the, you know, the crazy Met fans on social who are going to be attacking me. Like, it was more like, now I was disappointed to lose him because he's an awesome hitter, no doubt. Much better hitter with us than he's been with you, but whatever. Heartbroken's not the right word. I was frustrated because, I'm going to be totally honest here, that thing that I've always had that I can hang over the Mets, total control, was taken. And that was not comforting.
I'm just going to be honest with you.
I
know. I respect that. You know, I appreciate it. I didn't think it would fall in the heartbroken category, but I wanted to ask.
Nope.
BT itself.
Now I'm thrilled you didn't come back.
Yeah. For now. Woo! Corey is in Edison, New Jersey. What's up, Corey?
Hey, fellas. So that exercise you guys did earlier when you were ranking the players, it got me thinking how Neesmith has been way more valuable in the series than OG and Mikhail. Mm-hmm. And if you said that before the series, I think that would have just been a crazy statement. And Sal's right by saying, you know, this series could easily be 2-2. But to be fair, I could see a Pacers fan saying, you know, if Neesmith doesn't sprain his ankle in game three, this series might already be over, right? And so he's been that impactful on offense and defense, the job he's doing on Brunson. So, you know,
the issue is, and I agree with what you're saying, Corey. Like, you could always be like, well, yeah, it could be 3-0. Well, yeah, it could be 2-2. The difference is the Knicks had an all-time epic choke in game one. It is what it is. They're down 3-1. But let's not make it like, the reason why I bring it up is it feels like now, well, the Pacers are a significantly better team. And the disparity between the two, up 3-1, it feels like it's skewed all toward the Pacers.
Mm-hmm.
In reality, it has not been that. Game two was close. I mean, the Pacers won the game, but I'm not saying, well, the Knicks could have won that game. They didn't. They lost that game. Game three, same thing. Yeah, these games could go either way, but the Knicks won it cleanly. They came back on the Pacers. Game four, Pacers won it cleanly. Game one was the Knicks game that they had. From start to finish, that's the best game that they played. Maybe the most in control any team has been in this series. Pacers early in game three, but obviously that lead, you know, swept away. The Knicks had a big lead throughout the 45 minutes of the game.
I know.
They were in control of that game.
You know, I think that I look at it this way because I know that the games have been tight, and let's say they lose in five. It's going to be looked upon by many, maybe not old Knicks fans, but historically, that pace has, you know, pushed him aside in five. Pretty easy, right? And it really has not been easy. However, I do feel that if they were to play 100 series, right, and everybody was healthy and there was no additions to or subtractions from either team, I feel like the Pacers would win 60, 65, maybe close to 70 of the series, just because the matchups are so in their favor.
Yeah, that's fair to feel that way. I'm just saying, based on the four games we've seen so far, it's not really the disparity that it feels like it is being down 3-1. The other thing that I was thinking, and now this is just like sports gods and karma and thing like that,
mm-hmm.
Wouldn't it be sweet and poetic and fitting if the Pacers themselves choked away a 3-1 lead? One went away from the NBA Finals after what they did last year, after what Halliburton prematurely did in game one.
Yep.
Wouldn't it be fitting up 3-1 if Halliburton and his Pacers choked away a 3-1 lead?
I'm here for the script. I don't see it happening.
Two of the games are at the Garden.
Script, which is not good.
No,
we don't win there anymore.
There's a path here.
I hear you.
Dude, I mean, if they lose 3 games at all at the Garden. Even 2-2 at the Garden's not good.
Dude, if they lose 3 straight at the Garden, they're going to give Tom Thibodeau the Don Chaney treatment where they're going to make him get a taxi outside of 7th Avenue after they fire him right after the game.
Remember I told you my buddy Wills offered me the free ticket?
Yeah.
But really, he paid $1,000 for it?
Yep.
And I think that the ticket price probably comes down now.
Oh, God, yeah. Yeah. Let me see. What's the spread here? Want to take a guess?
Knicks by 3.5?
4.5.
Okay, which is similar to what it was, game one, no?
It was 4.5 game one. I think last night was 2.5 or 3 in the previous game. Yeah, I think it started 4.5.
Maybe look at tickets. Maybe this is the game you take Colt to if the tickets price comes down here.
Thursday, I think we got a game Thursday.
Come on, game five.
What?
Game seven. If there is a game seven, it's going to go skyrocket.
Try to lull me there.
Well, your wife wanted you to go. She was saying go to the game.
She was saying the same thing last night. She's like, you got to go. I'm like, I like watching from here. Trying to get rid of me? I mean,
she really does want you to
go. Hell, God.
She's saying, oh, you two go together. I was like, yeah, I'm good. Come on, we're hanging out watching this game. We work together 4 hours a day, 5 days a week.
Know.
No, but I mean, I'm going to go to the game because I committed to do it. I still haven't decided how much I'm going to pay or if I am going to take him up on that free offer or not. You know, I mean, I've got to think I got to do something nice.
Maybe just give him some surf sides. You, yeah, you get them on the house.
Oh, I've done it. Yeah. Surf sides. Take them to rails.
Every checkpoint where Sal gets hooked up. Nice little dinner with our buddy Chef Frank, over at Rails. Frankie boy taking
Frank
care,
will take
of us.
Care of us when, oh, they come in. God. No, I got to do something nice. But, I mean, I was hoping really 2-2 because then the ticket value goes up. And now, like, now you feel like, all right, whatever. $1,000 for this, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
Down 3-1.
Well, did you lose your confidence already? You just said
you felt good.
No,
I think they're winning the game. No, but
right.
But there's just a feel, you know, down 3-1 in a series, it just don't feel, at the time, good.
Yeah.
But I really do see a path. And this is not, you know, I'm consistent with this stuff, meaning, like, if I feel like I need to criticize the Knicks or don't believe they're going to win, right or wrong, I'm going to say it. I really, in my gut, don't feel like this series is over yet.
Okay. I hope you're right. Now I'm going to ask you why.
Because, and I said this earlier, BT, because I still don't believe the disparity. I don't think the Pacers are that much better than the Knicks. I still believe the Knicks have more talent, and that is going to win out. Like, let's say Brunson goes nuts in game five. Okay, that's the Brunson game. Now you got two more games to go, or whatever. Towns has a big game in game five. Brunson wins it on the road in game six. I believe the Knicks have enough talent to where I can see them winning a game or two just based on that alone. Not to mention that I saw what they did to the Pacers in game one, so I know it's still possible to do that, what they did in game three. Like, the Knicks should have beaten them two out of the four games so far. They did beat them only once, I understand that, but there's a path there. And I do value home. I know that the home court hasn't meant much. Now it's law of averages time. Like, are they really going to lose three in a row at home? Come on.
I mean, I don't think so. I think they probably find a way to get tomorrow night. But, see, it works both ways here.
And you think Pacers in six?
That's probably where I have to go at this point. Yeah. I think they probably wrap it back up in Indy. And you know, if it gets to game seven, it'll be phenomenal. Who knows? That's our only hope at this point. But one of the byproducts, right, when you're not playing well in a series in terms of being down multiple games, and there's a frustration that's built with the home fans. And Knicks fans right now, like last year, we were applauding them. We were enjoying the run. There was an element of overachievement. This year, nobody feels that way. Even though I think deep down, none of us really think strongly they could beat the Thunder. But this is a different, the stakes have been raised, okay? So the Knicks fans aren't content right now. They're frustrated. They're pissed off. And they should be. And those who are going to be at the Garden tomorrow night, if the Pacers get off to a good start, that energy completely flips and it works against you. Now, if you're up 13-4, timeout, Indiana, talk it over, place is popping, got some good music, not to go New York, you save that for the end, but everything's good. You're down 17-6 and they're just bombarding triples. Now the realization seeps in like, wow, they really are better than us, and now it sounds different, and now it's almost like you wish you were playing on the road.
Yeah,
that's how it goes.
I know they've been better on the road. I understand that. I just feel like the Knicks, now they're going to need some home cooking and the support of the fans to get them to a game six. What happens in game six, who knows? I'd be shocked if they lost game five. Like, shocked.
I wouldn't be shocked. Shocked is too strong. They have not earned that. The Knicks have not earned the right to have the emotion. Be shocked. Like, they wouldn't be. How could I say I'm shocked when they never win at the Garden anymore?
Yeah.
And they weren't even good there during the regular season.
I mean, they pasted the Celtics. Again, I know it was a depleted Celtics team, but they came out and pasted them after game five, where everybody's like, oh, Celtics, look out. They're going to come back in the series. They put them to sleep.
That was definitely their best game. I thought the Celtics were going to play much better than I thought the Knicks would win, but I thought the Celtics would push them. I think that was just Boston, what they did emotionally the previous game for Tatum. I think that they were tapped out, and the Knicks, obviously, to their credit, took great advantage of it. I mean, it was a layup line. It was fun.
Game four with Tatum healthy. That was the game I was at in that round. The Knicks played arguably their best game there. They pulled away and beat the Celtics clean at home before the Tatum injury. So I still feel like, I know the record hasn't been good. I think it's just flukish circumstance. I really don't believe that it's because they're feeling the pressure or anything like that.
No, I don't think that they're feeling the pressure, although I think they could feel that, as I said, you know, maybe tomorrow night if it doesn't start well. I just don't think they're built properly.
Well, that's...
I mean, it just comes, you know, you can play in a palace, you can play in West 4th, you know, play this playground. If you're not built right and you got a coach like Carlisle with these weapons, you're not going to look good.
Right, doesn't matter where you play.
No.
The inconsistency is there. Alex is in East Quag. What's up, Alex?
Hey, good morning, guys. Before I get into Tibbs, just a real quick thing. dream on if you think Giannis is coming to New York. Milwaukee's going to, if they trade him, they're going to be in total rebuild. And we have, thank you, Mikhail, and thank you, Leon, we have zero draft picks. If you think they're going to take Karl Anthony Towns and some combination of players off this mismatched team for Giannis, you're crazy. Anyway, let me get into Tibbs.
Whatever. I would push back on that, but I know you got some Tom Thibodeau stuff. Knicks will be at the table for Giannis. Do they get him? Probably not, but they'll be in the conversation.
And we'll have that conversation throughout the course of the summer.
Well, you'd be crazy not to be at the table, but let me get into Tibbs, and Sal, you can rip me when I'm off the air. Seriously. Okay. First of all, to say we're not going, I'm not going down with DeLon Wright. No one's going to argue with that, but here's what coaching is about. And you say it was against the Indiana's B team when Wright was plus 11 in 9 minutes. Well, Indiana's B team has often outplayed the A team. Here's what I'm saying. And I want one more, and I want to kind of make one more point after this. When Halliburton is ripping us to shreds in the third quarter and Mikal Bridges is not scoring and he's not playing defense, you bring in your mini Bruce Bowen. The guy is a really good defender, 6'5" with long arms, just to try to stop the momentum. There's no downside to giving him three more minutes when it counts to get a defensive stop here and there. And secondly, when you talk about Tibbs coached his buns off, I think he said BT, he was screaming, get back on defense, run down, sprint down the court. Great. Here's one thing. He spent the entire regular season screaming and ranting and raving and throwing his arms around and getting in the refs' faces. In the fourth quarter, when the game was getting away from them last night, Mathurin twice comes down in a row, falls over his own feet, and the Knicks get called for a foul.
Yep.
You got to use a technical foul there to try to change momentum. I don't care about the extra point. I would have liked to see Tibbs defend his players and get crazy. Sal, if you think the Knicks owe Tibbs one more year to come back and quote unquote see if he can make this totally mismatched puzzle piece team work, you're crazy. And then one last thing, Indiana is a better team than the Knicks. I don't care about their individual talent. When you talk about puzzle pieces, Indiana is put together way better.
Yeah, but nobody disputes that. So then how's that Tibbs' fault then, Alex? Which one is it? Are they put together right or no?
That is not Tibbs' fault. Tibbs' fault is for not maximizing the players he has.
I agree. We agree with that. Yeah, thank you for the call. The reason why I said, and first of all, I didn't say the Knicks owe Tibbs anything. I said I would give him one more chance with this group to see if it looks different. I don't think it's fair to properly judge him on 1 year. You could, and you could be ahead of it and say, I don't like the way that he worked with this group right here. I don't see them coming out of it. You could go get Malone, who's a proven champion out there. Like, those are all viable, realistic things, and you could have that thought. I think Tom Thibodeau, I think he has earned one more season with this group, at the very least a start of a season, because I don't think the flaw is all him.
Yeah.
I think it's the mix of the players.
It's a little bit of everything. You know, it's funny. If you say, hey, again, just on his body of work since he got here, does Tom Thibodeau deserve another year? My answer would be like just in about yes. But does Tom Thibodeau deserve another year with this group? I know that almost seems like a contradiction.
No, it doesn't. Because
that's where I'm like, no, he hasn't done enough to show me he knows what to do with this group.
Okay, but then here's my counter to that. Because I respect being proactive, right? You're right. Nobody can dispute that Tom Thibodeau has earned the right for another season. Like, even if they lost in Game 5, his resume speaks for itself. He did not deserve to lose his job, even if they get pasted in Game 5 at home, based on all that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you're proactive and looking at it and you don't believe he's the right guy to turn this around, that is a different story. You could look at the individual group as well. But I think it's more about the mix of the players. Do you think that another coach, while we think that maybe they could be better than Tibbs, do you think ultimately, let's use Malone or whoever,
mm-hmm.
can come in and get this group, this exact team, to be a championship team?
Not a championship team unless they... Now, the new coach would also have the benefit of a move or two over the summer, a shooter,
but I'm saying this
one
team,
more bench guy. But I'm going to answer you. My answer would be no, but he would get more out of them. And in the NBA, like, you never know what circumstances might present themselves. Like, we didn't think the Celtics would be gone. We didn't think the Cavaliers would be gone. Like, I do think that, and Malone's not the only one, I believe that other teams would get more out of the roster. You know, the one thing that we got to factor in as well here, real quick, just to shift from Thibodeau to the owner, you've got to wonder how reluctant James Dolan's going to be to do something that could be perceived in the minds of some either unfair or a little anarchy, like here, whoa, what a quick trigger by Dolan. I don't think he wants that anymore. I think that he's very happy with the stability, and he should be, that he's been doing a great, honestly, I mean, if he's listening, James, thank you. Thank you for finally doing what we were begging you to do, to lay out, to cut the checks, which he always did, and just get some competent basketball people. Like, I speak for every Knick fan, even those who would go crazy at the owner. Thank you. You got a tough decision this summer because you can let this ride and never win. They will not win a championship with Tom Thibodeau. I believe that. I'm sorry. Or you could do something that would be unpopular or unfair to some, catch some flack now, but might ultimately be better. That's a tough call.
It might ultimately be worse. Might be the beginning of the end. Remember, part of the appeal about what Dolan has done here is hiring Leon Rose and getting out of the way. Do you think Leon Rose wants to fire his guy, Tibbs?
No, but hold on. I know he doesn't. But do I think that Leon Rose, based on the cat move, based on the no bench, based on the Bridges deal, do I think that Leon Rose, I'm going to be very blunt right now. I don't give a damn what Leon Rose wants, because I don't think that Leon Rose has earned the rope to continue to do whatever he wants as much as others. I mean, this guy moved mountains to build a championship team. Cat's not it. There's no bench. Bridges ain't it. OG got $250 million. So I know that they're a lot better than that. Of course, I recognize that, and I'm appreciative of Leon Rose getting them out of the abyss of hell. I understood, but that doesn't mean that he's been great at these moves that they made. There's really not much more to do, and this is not a championship team.
But it's been 1 year.
But he's been here for 4.5.
Yeah, no. But he's been great for 4.5 years. I'm talking about this one group.
I know.
But like, you're saying definitively they're not a championship team. Leon Rose put this team
don't
together.
Don't you agree with that when I say
no.
that?
No.
You really don't?
Not at all.
You think that this crew can win a championship?
I don't
with
know.
With Cat Brunson, the worst defenders? Really?
Here's what I know. They're 3 wins from the NBA Finals.
I know.
It's been 1 year. Like, I don't know how.
I don't need to see another year of Cat. I don't. He's going to get slower and sloppier.
Okay.
He ain't going to get tighter and
maybe,
faster.
Maybe Rose figures out that same thing. I have no idea. But you don't think Rose is earning the benefit of that? What do you want to do?
I'm not saying fire.
Okay, but we're saying the same thing about the head coach that he hired and we're trusting him.
Like, yeah, but there's other evidence with Tom Thibodeau in other spots, which I'm incorporating to this.
Right.
The Minnesota disaster. You know, the Bulls had a lot of good. I mean, I know Derrick Rose blew his knee out, but you have Yoakum, though. You had some players there.
Yeah.
And I just think, I think he's like a Buck Showalter. I think he's very similar personalities, too. All about ball, clean things up, no nonsense. You're going to be a professional, and I am truly grateful for that. And he is a good coach. But, like, Buck never broke through and had that mismanagement with the Orioles, forgot about his closer. Like, there were just certain limitations that I see and have seen for a while with Tom Thibodeau. And that's not going to, my opinion's not going to change on that. I'm not saying get rid of Leon Rose. All I'm saying is Leon Rose made massive moves this summer. What other lever do you pull to make the Knicks a championship team? You got no picks. You don't have a lot of money. I don't know what he can do now.
No, it's going to be the coach.
That's a problem.
The next thing is, okay, well, I built a team that I believe could be a championship team. We need to bring a coach in, whether it's Dolan nudging him or whether it's Rose himself saying, I feel like we've maxed out with you, Tibbs, even if that's his boy, and going to get somebody else. Because it's either that, if assuming that they fall short, it's either that or find new players, find a new mix. I don't know if he could do that. But, I mean, I wholeheartedly trust Leon Rose. And I wouldn't be firing Tibbs based off of warranted, it'd be more proactive saying you think somebody else can be better and it's the only thing that you can do to maybe change it up.
Here's why I cannot wholeheartedly trust Leon Rose, because the massive move that he made, everybody in the NBA knew that Cat was awful at pick and roll, which you have to be good at to win, doesn't set good screens, and is an atrocious defender. Like, he's not year three, he's been around 10 years. And Leon Rose, and again, I am grateful. I think Leon Rose done a good job, but that move did not work, and it's not going to work. He's not going to get better. He's not going to get a better body. Not going to get quicker. Not going to get more explosive. He's going to get worse. And Leon Rose identified him as the championship move, and he swung and missed.
Good questions.
Three random questions.
Let's find out.
With Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata.
One, two, three.
On The Fan.
Hi, BT, a little 3RQ, as we do every Wednesday at 11:40. Number one, this one comes from Hoff, but it's a good one, so I chose it today.
Okay.
If you and your family were invited over to a barbecue, would you ask if it's okay to bring another guest with you as well?
I don't think I would do that. No, no. I mean, you kind of get a sense of how formal it is and depends upon how well you know the person. But, I mean, I don't even really want to go to the barbecue. Yeah. I got to worry about inviting other people here.
Yeah,
No, that's not my responsibility. Would you?
I'm with you. I would not as well. Hoff, obviously, you're the one who came up with
yeah,
this.
Yeah, it's not a responsibility. It's more like, hey, I was doing something earlier on Monday, and I was with my wife's cousin, and her boyfriend wasn't around, and we were going to go to a party. Mm-hmm. So I just said to her, are you doing anything? She said, no. I was like, well, why don't you just come with us? Why don't you just hang with us? So I reached out to the person that was holding the party, the barbecue,
yeah.
And they didn't get back to me. But when I got to the party, they said it's not a problem. However, we chose not to bring my cousin because my wife had a problem with that.
I feel like you've done this before, though. Because I remember
100%.
I remember last year I was trying to get people together, BT, and it just never worked out.
Oh,
and
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah, and we were trying to get a date, and then I invited Hoff and the family, and then he's like, "Can my sons bring their girl or something like what? That?"
Yeah, my stepson had a girlfriend at the time.
He goes, "What?"
My stepson had a girlfriend.
Oh,
at the time.
They broke up?
Yeah, they did.
Who broke up with whom?
Which time?
Yeah. But see, okay, this is what I mean. So you were going to bring her along.
Well, I was trying to convince JD to come to the barbecue, and it seemed like the only way that was going to happen is he brought his girlfriend.
I mean, he is 15. I can understand that. It's a pool party.
I understand, but now... But it's like, I mean, it's not like he's married. You know what I mean? We got to bring him to... You're going to bring girlfriends now?
At 15, though, they kind of are kind of married a little bit.
I mean, I...
what was that voice?
What? I guess. All right, anyway. No, I would not do that. If somebody invites me, I'm just going with my...
Me too, but I got to tell you, the way Hoff laid it out, it's not terrible. Yeah. It's not a real, like, you know, unacceptable imposition. Now, if he's doing this all the time, maybe that's a different conversation. Not awful, though. I usually don't do that, but not the worst.
All right, number two.
Number two.
This is ridiculous here. I'm getting texts from somebody who's supposed to come. I get somebody
coming
to the
house. What's wrong with the house now?
I get somebody to I want to make sure the basement is all proper as far as, like, the water and stuff like that. I want to preemptively strike.
Okay.
Make sure the drainage is good and the basement. And I tell my wife, naturally, the guy's coming at 12 o'clock. And today's our anniversary, by the way. Happy anniversary.
Is it really?
Yeah. Eight
oh,
years.
Man. Happy anniversary, buddy.
Thanks. So I tell my wife, 12 o'clock. It's 11:52, and she's not there, and I'm getting text from the guy now. Oh, I'm answering the door. No one here. Well, oh, God.
Well, listen, look at it this way. Maybe she is home, and maybe she's just like... upstairs and laying out a bed of roses for when you come home, and she's got nice new slippers for you.
That's not happening.
Got a nice new robe.
I don't want that. I just wanted to be home when the freaking guy comes at 12, for goodness sake. Why is it 11:52 and she's still not there?
Where is she? Did you ask her?
Yeah, she had to go out and run some errands. Okay, I just got a text now from her. I'm home. The guy's here. Yeah, he texted me first. You weren't home. You got called.
Not 12 yet, though, Sal. Come on.
I know that, but Dove, I mean, come on. We're playing with fire here. Yeah, you did say 12, but what, she's not going to show up?
Well, yeah, she'll leave a little wiggle room on the front and back end in case he's earlier, 15,
did
20
you
minutes
ask
late.
Her to?
You got to play it that close to the vest? Anyway, all right, number two. Why get married? No, number two. All right, what qualifications would you look for or value when hiring a TaskRabbit worker? Are you familiar with TaskRabbit?
I don't know what that is.
Okay, or hiring a worker to come to... TaskRabbit is like if you have... we have like lawn chairs that we need assembled, umbrellas assembled. And I don't want to do it. I'm tired of doing it. Like, I don't want to do it. I don't care if it takes a half hour, an hour. I don't want to be sitting out there. Time is valuable. I'm not doing it. Have you ever hired TaskRabbit at all?
No.
You know what I'm talking about, what that
no,
is?
No, I've never. No.
So TaskRabbit is, I guess, a service that you can hire somebody.
Okay, to come and do menial things that you want to. Okay, okay.
What value? So what qualifications would you look for or value when hiring a TaskRabbit worker?
None, because I would do it myself.
Would you really?
Yeah, dude, I don't mind doing that. Like, we got these new chairs that... for our island in our kitchen.
Yeah.
And we got them over the winter.
Yeah.
It came in boxes. I'm like, you know what? And this is the difference between me and you. I pour a little scotch.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, let me do it. I got the directions. Let me dive in. And then I made sure I called the kids over. I said, hey, this is the kind of wrench you want to cut it. Because my dad didn't show me how to do it. Because he didn't know how to. Oh, I would get hit with F-bombs. And then everybody would get frustrated. I'd say, Dad, let me do it. Like when I got to college, I'm like, let me do it. Relax. But when I'm young, I couldn't really say that. And yeah. I want my kids to learn how to do that just a little bit. No, like, I mean, yes, I have somebody who comes and cuts the grass. Mm-hmm. But like, Well, you have somebody come and fluff the pillows? Come on, dude, what are you talking about?
I can do. With the umbrellas, dude, they're big umbrellas.
So what? How big? I've got one. How big?
The big umbrellas with the big bag. I just don't want to do it. I don't want to be bothered with it. I want to take it out of the box. So I'm looking for somebody who's reliable,
okay,
experienced.
Well, if
fast.
That's the case, I'm looking for somebody who's got, if there's a resume of reliability, somebody's going to show up. And obviously, price does matter a bit.
So this guy, I want to read you the review. That was the whole point.
I'm looking
at reviews for this guy.
Okay.
And he was like highly recommended. It was like elite status ribbon, fast worker. I maybe charged whatever, ribbon. $50 an hour. Quote, this is a review that was left for him on TaskRabbit. He was amazing. Contacted me if I could come early. Very professional. Did the job in 30 minutes. Felt like it was less than 30 minutes. My only thing is that his body odor was horrible.
Oh, God.
Very respectful man. His smell was just very disrespectful. That was my only issue.
Oh, boy. Yeah, I think I find somebody who's not quite as competent that wasn't a slob.
I'm hiring him.
You are?
What do I care what he smells like?
You won't
like
be home when he comes. That's why.
That's exactly right. He's going to be outside. Just get the job done. All right, that was number two. Well, who leaves that on a review, by the way? He was very respectful, but his smell was disrespectful.
And what's that? He's working all day.
What do you want him to do?
That's true. A task rabbit? That's what it's called. Never heard of that.
I've never used it before, but for this, I just didn't want to be. Usually I would buy it with assembly, but I couldn't get like
the Geek Squad if something goes wrong with the computers.
Exactly, something like that.
Yeah, okay.
All right, last one.
The Lazy Squad. This is what this is.
Stop it.
For him.
You want to come over? Or I could call Mitch and have him come over and help me out.
By the way,
Mitch is like his own task rabbit.
Yeah. I just got hit up on TikTok. A fan just hit us up saying that they're willing to, don't pay, he'll come over and fix your stuff for you.
Oh, yeah. That sounds safe.
I got until Friday to cancel it. Yeah, exactly.
That sounds trustworthy. Here, I'll be right there. Here's where I live.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Last one for you.
Yeah.
If you could watch a game at any old stadium, which one would it be?
Oh.
I know.
Oh, man. Any old stadium. I think I've got to go Ebbets Field.
Okay.
I think I've got to go Ebbets Field. You know, I've thought about some old golf venues, like this fascinates me. I told you that. Like Bobby Jones, Sam Snead, whatever. But if I'm going to go like with a conventional sport, I mean, Ebbets Field, I mean, I'm from there. I'm from Flatbush. Like, how do I not go there?
To me,
where my dad went growing up.
To me, there are only two.
Okay.
Either Ebbets Field
or... Polo?
Did you see the news?
I did see this.
So, for those of you who don't know...
So, this yesterday. This is great. Go ahead.
Baseball announced yesterday they're going to break ground in Pelham Bay Park in the Bronx to build a two-scale replica of the Polo Grounds, which is going to host a special event series once a year, similar to the Field of Dreams game.
Now, that is amazing. Now, I know Pelham well. I played a lot of, high school, a lot of teams we play, we go. I think maybe All Hallows. Like, I know the area okay. And the only thing about that, it doesn't seem like it's the best usage. I'm sure it's not privately funded. I would think taxpayers are weighing in a little bit here. Like, you can have one event a year. Now, I know that you'll build up the rest of the area,
like
the infrastructure.
One series, but still.
Yeah. Now, as long as kids, but you're not going to build this monstrosity of a stadium because it's going to be the scale, as you said, and have one game a year.
The seating capacity will not be what it was.
No, there's no way. It was a massive. No, I didn't think that. I just meant the dimensions. And if kids are out there playing in tournaments and maybe a concert venue, if you want something outside, I think it's great. I did see that. I love it.
My initial thought was like, I can't wait to go. I want to go to the first game there because I feel like it connects me to my grandfather and his brother. My grandfather was a Yankee fan, but still, they grew up going to the Polo Grounds or Ebbets Field.
Yeah.
My grandfather's brother, my dad's uncle, was a big Carl Hubbell fan, Giants fan. For us to be able to go sit in the stadium that is an exact replica of the Polo Grounds and watch a baseball game there.
Dude.
That's like...
Well, I mean, that to me, matter of fact, this just triggered a memory here. So there's a course, I don't know if it's still open, it probably is, down in Myrtle Beach called World Tour. And when you pull up, I've been there a lot, when you pull up, you actually get, instead of like a scorecard, you get a passport. And it's basically, I think there were three different nines, so 27 holes, and each, it was like scale. So it was like... a sequence of Amen's Corner at Augusta.
Yeah.
It was like Spanish Bay. It was, world, out of Scotland. Just crazy stuff. And to scale, like it really, truly is to scale. So to be able to go into a stadium now, are they going to have old signage? Like that's the appeal for me. Old signage, how much, like the way they do around it is going to be awesome. I saw that and I meant to bring that up. I think that's awesome.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
I can't wait to check that out.